So good evening, everybody. Welcome to the President's Pod, the second installment of this live talk show. Hopefully ASPS doesn't get sued by whoever owns the theme song to the West Wing, but it is a favorite show of mine. So welcome tonight. I'm joined by our two co-hosts, Ash Patel, who's the Dean of ASPSU, and the one and only Michelle Rotwin, who's the chair of the Membership Development Committee. They each have about five other roles in ASPS, and we don't have enough time to discuss them all. So tonight's episode is going to be Meet the Veeps. And as you know, this is a live webinar, a live talk show that will be then converted into a podcast. And tonight, we want it to be informal, like last time, with live Q&A, a casual, informal discussion. Our guests tonight are the board vice presidents. So before we get started, I want to just let folks know how the org chart of the board of directors and the executive committee, because until I was sitting on it, I didn't really understand it either. Our board of directors have 32 members, and it is really the seat of authority. It's the seat of power for our society. It meets at least twice a year, and it's a combined board of our society, ASPS, and our foundation, the PSF, or the Plastic Surgery Foundation. There are, and then the board, those 32 people are made up of the executive committee, which are 15, and I'll talk about those, two senior trustees, two members at large, and then representatives from a slew of our subspecialty or sister societies. Now, they only meet twice a year, but the executive committee is the delegated seat of authority when the board is not in session. It's the group that runs the day-to-day business, and we meet almost monthly, or it seems like we meet more than that. and it's made up of 15 people, and it's the presidential line. So it's the president of the ASPS and the president of the PSF, the immediate past presidents, and the presidents-elect. So that's six. And then it has the board vice presidents, who you'll meet tonight, the executive vice president, Michael Costello, and our board counsel. So who are the VEEPs, the board vice presidents? Well, we have on the those on the ASPS side and the PSF line that move up. One is the board vice president of education, Scott Hollenbeck, who you'll hear from. Then the board vice president of academic affairs from the PSF line, Bruce Mast. The PSF line board vice president of development, Scott Glassberg. The ASPS line board vice president of membership, Steve Williams. The ASPS board vice president of the money, finance and treasurer. And that's Bob Basu, who's stuck in the OR making money tonight. So Dr. Peter Rubin, who is the immediate past treasurer and is the president-elect for our society, is standing in his stead. The PSF line board vice president of research, Howie Levinston, and the ASPS board vice president of health policy and advocacy, Greg Greco. So with that, I'm going to introduce the board vice presidents. They each get 5 minutes, and they're going to tell us what the heck they do for ASPS, what their role is, what their job is, and then more importantly, they're going to tell us about themselves, who they are, their life, their story, their family, and what's important to all of us on the call. And again, this is a live webinar, so you have the opportunity to raise your hand to voice your questions, and no holds barred. This is you can ask anything of these folks. They're willing to answer everything. And Ash and Michelle will lively moderate that discussion. So without further ado, our first board vice president on the ASPS line is the board vice president of education, Scott Hollenbeck.
Thanks, Joe. And I want to thank Ash and Michelle for inviting us tonight. So as Joe said, I'm the board vice president of education. And basically what that boils down to is what you all see as the meetings, and especially the annual meeting, what's called PSTM, which is gonna happen this year, hopefully in person in Atlanta. And so keep your eye out for that. And also we have a spring meeting, which is actually just around the corner, which is an exciting collection of aesthetic and breast topics. So that's another event that I look after, as well as many other things you see virtual and things we offer online, such as ASPS University, EdNet, which is a collection of many different types of resources, lectures, videos, other didactic courses that you can take, as well as a new initiative this past year, Virtual Grand Rounds, led by Angela Chang, which has been very successful with numerous topics throughout the year. We also oversee the continuous medical education work that's done by ASPS. As many of you know, that's a valuable part of what we deliver, which is CME credit, but we have to have a process related to that. So that's one of my purviews as well. From a professional standpoint, my route to plastic surgery came through general surgery, where I trained in New York City and actually was interested in cancer surgery to start with. And then I got interested in vascular surgery. And then I became interested more in improving patients' quality of life and restoring them. And so now I am a plastic surgeon and I do a lot of vascular or microvascular surgery for cancer patients. So it's all kind of come together. And I found that to be a very rewarding part of my career. In terms of my involvement with ASPS, like many of you, I started as a resident presenting at the meetings, looking at the online material that was available for education, and just got more and more involved with the organization through many of the great mentors, some of which you see on the call here, but others that have been in leadership positions encouraging me to get involved. So I thank them for encouraging me, and hopefully I can do that for some of you out there as well. On a personal level, I'm married, I have two kids, and that's really sort of the main activities in my life outside of work. Two boys are in high school, and one of the biggest enjoyments I've had in my life was being able to coach them in Little League Baseball. And many of you know that I've done that in the past. But I have to say that was one of the most enjoyable things I did. I also learned a lot about myself and my leadership skills through Little League coaching, believe it or not, managing player expectations, managing players' parents. All these things really paid off and also allowed me to connect with the community in a positive way. So I would encourage you all to get involved with your kids' activities if at all possible. It's very rewarding for me. Other things you may not know about me as we wrap it up here. I play guitar and I was in a band in high school and a little bit in college. I also was a DJ for a while. My DJ name was H. Beck, spelled with a Q. So I'm often called H. Beck in the OR. That is the short abbreviated name that the residents like to call me by. Other things, basically I enjoy music and I enjoy spending time with my family. My boys do enjoy playing video games, so I have been known to actually get on and play some video games and have won a couple games of Fortnite. So that's probably my greatest achievement to date. But anyway, I hope that's given you a little bit of insight as to who I am. I'm always open and available for communication. One of my main goals for ASPS is to involve as many people as possible, new faces in the presentations. And if you're interested, please reach out. I'd love to get you involved. Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you so much, Scott. That's awesome. And I'm enjoying this because I'm learning about, we should have done this on the executive committee from the very beginning. Okay, the next VEEP is from the PSF line, the Board Vice President of Academic Affairs, Bruce Mast.
Thanks, Joe. And like Scott said, thanks to Ash and Michelle for playing the host for this. It's a pleasure to be here. I'm Bruce Mast. I'm the VP for Academic Affairs, which pretty much is the PSF line that runs everything or oversees everything that's academic. And the things that are included are the Academic Affairs Council, which is a group that meets two or three times a year that includes leaders from the ABPS, RRC, ACAPS, the association, as well as us, where the collectively the folks that are sort of running academic plastic surgery can discuss issues, hash them out, and find things that are important for our society that we need to move forward with. I'm also involved with the resident education curriculum, which is, has been morphed into the EdNet. So that's become, it used to be more of a written curriculum, but now it's become a multimedia curriculum with PowerPoints and videos, and keeps on getting updated on a fairly regular basis. And it's really a very large volunteer process on multiple levels throughout throughout the country. So it's actually a pretty impressive effort that, that the members have put forth with that. The international scholarships are also under this line, as well as the Senior Residence Conference. And I'm sure I'm missing a few other things as I'm thinking about it. The motivation to become involved in the executive committee was the fact that I've been involved in several levels over the years at ASPS, and it's the largest organization of plastic surgeons in the world. I felt that having to work within that organization and help move our specialty forward and help guide it with a bunch of other like-minded people would be a pretty awesome experience. And so far, it's turned out to be that way. On a personal level, my background is I grew up in New York and New Jersey. I went to a medical school at Robert Wood Johnson and did general surgery training at the Medical College of Virginia, which is now, of course, VCU, but everyone from my age and a little beyond that is all still calls it MCV. And then I did a lot of wound healing research and fetal wound healing. And then I went to Pittsburgh, UPMC, for my plastic surgery training. And then I came to Florida, where I've been at for the last, longer than I'll tell you. I've been, I came here in 1995. And I was on the faculty here for about 5 years. I went to a private practice actually in Gainesville for about 11 years and came back a little over 10 years ago in my present role, which is the chief of plastic surgery. I've also served as the department chair here for a year as an interim basis for the department of surgery. And now I'm an associate dean for regional programs. So I'm working with the medical center as we regionalize throughout the state. But that kind of puts me in a very interesting position to see how plastic surgery fits into academic medicine and kind of gives me a good perspective in that regard. On a more personal basis, I've been married for 30 years this June 1st. So that's it's hard to believe anyone will put up with me for 30 years. But someone has. And we have two children. Our oldest is Alexis, and she's a medical student, first year medical student in Arizona. And my youngest is Jackson, who's 18, and he's a freshman over at Florida State. Things I like to be outside. It's, you know, I live in Florida and it's an outdoor state and we do a lot of boating, but I'm also big into backpacking and hiking, and I've gone throughout the country on a lot of backpacking trips overnight. And I actually do that with a guy I trained with, Steve Bernard. So I've developed a lifelong friend from my residency when I was in the plastic surgery at Pittsburgh. And a fun masked fact that people always ask me, what's the fun masked fact? Fun masked fact is that I went to high school with John Bon Jovi. And we used to kind of make fun of him because he wanted to be a rock star. Go figure that one out. So he had the last word on that. Anyway, well, thanks for having me here tonight.
Great, thanks, Bruce. And we have a connection because my husband and his wife are both pediatric anesthesiologists who both trained in the same program. Mm-hmm. So. Great. Our next up is a PSF line board vice president of development, Dr. Scott Glassberg, who knows very little about our society and our foundation. He's brand new to all of this. But Scott, feel free to tell us about your job and yourself.
Thanks, Joe. And again, thanks to Michelle and Ash for inviting us tonight. as Joe points out, I've sort of been around the block a little bit. I'm currently the board VP of development. And in that role, the role is pretty much money, right? It's try to raise money for the society and the foundation through various efforts, membership, which you see often. I'm sort of the bad guy who gets to raise the money that then Bob Basu gets to count as the VP of finance. we also raise money and engage our partner industry partners and continue to enhance those relationships. And we also go out to institutions for grants and things like that to raise money. As Joe noted, I'm a past president of ASPS. I came up the ASPS line, mostly through the advocacy and finance lines. And I think those who know me would attest to the fact that I'm pretty much a political wonk. And I sort of say that, with quotes. In terms of my practice, I'm in private practice in New York City in Manhattan, which is no longer the Big Apple. We call it the Small Apple because there's nobody here anymore since March of 2019. It is pretty amazing. I think I sent to some of you on here a picture from the middle of the pandemic at 7 o'clock at night from Times Square, and there was not a single car or person walking in the street. So life has changed here in New York. My practice background is I do a lot of breast and body work on both the aesthetic and reconstructive sides. On a personal note, I have a wife, Elisa, who keeps my family going and allows me to do what I the things I like to do. And I say that to her all the time. You can't say it enough, I will tell you that. I have three children. The oldest is 20. Is Alexander. He's a sophomore at Columbia, and he is not going into medicine. He's going into finance and actually now teaching me about finance, kind of neat. My middle son, Evan, is a freshman in high school. His big deal is he's a basketball player. And to Scott Hollenbeck's comment earlier, one of the greatest joys I got to do over the last 6 years is coach Evan in some of the rec leagues, but he's way beyond that. He's in travel and plays high school ball now. But I agree with you, watching him grow as a ball player and watching him grow as a young man and being able to sort of interact with his friends on that sort of personal basis. My wife made fun of me when I started to do it. Like, why do you want to do that? And then watches me do it now and sort of lives vicariously, I think, through me as I get to coach them. My youngest is Chloe. She's in the fifth grade. Chloe is 10, but Chloe runs the family. Chloe has an opinion on everything. Chloe has something to say about everything. She probably learned that from me most, and my wife and the boys, but Chloe literally wears the pants in the family, so to speak. She runs everything. On an aside, some things people didn't know about me. I was a big tennis player in college. I went to Columbia as well, and I played tennis at Columbia. Some of my hobbies, so to speak, I'm huge in movies and music. And one of the things we do in my OR is to constantly quote movie lines, and everybody has to figure out where they're from. We play music and try to figure out what movies they're from as well. One thing I'm sure nobody knows about me here, when I was in college and medical school, I actually ran a ticket business. And through that, got to go to a lot of events, music and otherwise, that I probably wouldn't have been able to. The one interesting thing was, I remember the first time I took my oldest son to a basketball game, and some of the scalpers came up to me, and instead of saying, "You want to buy tickets?" said, "Hey, Scott, how are you?" And my son looked at me like, "What the hell is going on here?" I have some artists that I like. John McEnroe was a big tennis fan since I've had a big tennis background. And interestingly enough, I got to help deliver his second child when I was in medical school. So it was like I was in awe for the week that he was there. And then Billy Joel is probably my favorite artist of all time. I've seen Billy Joel in concert 61 times. Wow. And the irony there in terms of being in the right place at the right time, when I was at NYU as a fellow, he came in with a kidney stone, and everybody knew that I was very, much a fan of Billy Joel, and he was in the hospital. So everybody said, "Oh, you got to go introduce yourself." And I was embarrassed as hell. So one night I was in the call room, and two of my surgical colleagues went and actually got him, walked him from his room into our call room to introduce him to me. And it was sort of, it's one of those things that, your heart skips a beat, like, what the hell? but in any case, that's sort of my background, some of the personal things. I don't think many of you knew a couple of those endings. One last little fact about me: I've been born, raised, and lived in New York City, Manhattan, basically for my entire life, with the exception of 5 years. I trained in Connecticut for general surgery. And an interesting fact is I have never lived in a house. I have always lived in an apartment, which is something which was telling, because the first time this summer, we actually rented a house in Connecticut, and it was a bit of a surreal experience to have as much room as we did, both land and geography in the house. So that's my background. And again, thank you for inviting me, Jeff.
Thank you, Scott, very much. I didn't realize we both have fifth graders too. It's this is an enjoyable call for me. So our next VP is the ASPS line, Board Vice President of Membership. So this is all about you, members. This is your chance to learn about your board vice president and then shoot him all kinds of challenging questions. Dr. Steve Williams.
Thank you for that. my name's Steve Williams, obviously. I'm the little signature you see reminding you to pay your membership dues, but I'm really happy to be here, and ASPS is an amazing organization, and a big tip of the hat to Joe for putting this together. I was originally, I've been on the EC for a little while. I was originally VP of aesthetic surgery, and then have transitioned to VP of membership. And this is my second term of VP of membership. And it's an amazing role, because ASPS really exists to support the members. As everyone knows, you know, we've been around since 1931, and we are one of the largest organizations of board certified plastic surgeons, representing 94% of board certified plastic surgeons in the United States. Additionally, in the last 5 to 10 years, through the work of the hard work of ASPS leadership, we've really grown our international ranks too, and we're rapidly approaching 10,000 members. And it's something that has really shown that ASPS is taking real leadership for all plastic surgeons. But for those that don't know, the membership line is responsible for ensuring that the ASPS is representing the membership concerns, that we're addressing membership needs, that we're growing membership, and that we continue to be representative for the things that our member physicians looked for. And so within the membership line, obviously the membership committee, publications committee, bylaws committee, leadership development, practice management, public education, diversity inclusion, which is a new committee that I was fortunate to help start, technology and innovation disruption committee, and then there are some other things that fall within membership, like compliance, accreditation, the international subcommittee, WPS, YPS, residence council, wellness subcommittee. So it's a very long list and diverse really a lot of responsibilities. But the important thing is membership, the membership line is responsive to the members. And you've probably seen me, or maybe you've seen me on the chat boards, or I take calls from members all the time. It's my role, and I take a lot of pride in making sure that if a member has a problem or a question, that if I don't have the answers, that I can connect them to who might, because ASPS exists for the benefit of its member physicians, and the member physicians are the reason that we do what we do. And so I take a lot of pride in the position, and we're really continuing to grow. A little bit about me personally. I'm in private practice, like Scott Glassberg. I am on the opposite side of the country from Dr. Glassberg. However, I'm in San Francisco Bay Area. I've been in practice for about 15 years. I went to college back east at Dartmouth, and then I went to Yale for my medical school training and for my plastic surgery residency. And my involvement with ASPS started as a resident, and John Persing and a lot of other great leaders really encouraged me to take an active role. Knowing full well that I wasn't going to pursue academic medicine, still said it was really important to have the perspective of private practice plastic surgeons as part of ASPS. And I really took that to heart. And I really, again, it's been an honor to be part of it. So I've lived on both coasts. I'm married. I met my wife at Yale when I was a resident. She was finishing her PhD program. She's the smart one in the family, which I think all smart spouses say. But in her case, it's kind of really true. She graduated from Yale's PhD program in biological sciences in 4 years, which had never been done before. She essentially published in Nature and said, okay, what do you want me to do next? And they're like, I guess you're done. And so she went into industry and works for Big Pharma. She's a director of translational research for AbbVie. And she's kind of the life and soul of the family. And she's wonderful. I have two children, an 8-year-old and 11-year-old, a boy and a girl. They are kind of surfing the coronavirus, education situation. But it's been really wonderful to raise a family out here in California. when I was training back east, I had a tech company. And for those of you that know me, you know that I've been in tech. I actually started in technology before I started in medicine. And I've exited, sold and exited from a successful tech company. And that's really kind of one of the things that really drives me, technology. But while I was in medical school, we had a branch office in Santa Cruz. And so I would fly out from medical school to Santa Cruz to meet with clients and to consult with the team out here. And every time I was out here, I was like, you know, this might be the place I kind of settle down. Even though I love New York, New York's my favorite city in the United States. I really fell in love with the West when I was out here with my company and kind of made it my mission to kind of come back out here. And so here I am in private practice. And things that people don't know about me aside from the tech standpoint is I also was a DJ in medical school. So Dr. Hollenbeck and I are going to have to, I still have my turntables. And so we can kind of get it out and just see who has what skills are left over the years.
This is cheap. This is cheap entertainment for PSTM. There we go.
That's right. That's right. And also, like Dr. Glassberger, I'm also a huge, huge, huge movie fan and really pride myself on knowing tons and tons of dialogue. And so Scott and I joust about all sorts of things, but I would love to just take him on and see what quotes, who comes on top of that. So
you're on.
All right. just to wrap it up, I'm really happy to be part of this. This is a great idea. And, all of us really are here for the members. And if people need to get a hold of us, any one of us are available to answer questions and to connect people to the right resources. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Steve. Okay, moving right along. Our next ASPS line board vice president for finance and treasurer is Bob Basu, who is stuck in the OR. And so I've asked Dr. Peter Rubin, who's our immediate past treasurer and is the ASPS president-elect to just give us a really short, Peter, introduction to what the treasurer and board vice president of finance does.
Absolutely. And thank you, Joe. And thanks to Michelle and Ash for having me here and letting me stand in for Bob. So what does the board vice president of finance and the treasurer do? So in a nutshell, our job is to ensure that ASPS is being a good steward of the members' finances and the society resources, and really help preserve the financial health of the organization. So we manage the finance and investment committee, oversee the investments, make sure that they're being done in accordance with our policies, our investment policies. We oversee the compensation of the staff, senior staff people, serve on the audit committee, and ensure financial controls throughout the society to make sure that there's being spent. When we look at all of the resources that go into just the administration of the society, it's a very, very small percentage of the money that goes into that. We also are really making sure that we have the resources to fulfill our core mission. And we're involved in all aspects of society functions. And I'm happy to report that there is a very, very stable financial health to our society. And we have very, very strong reserves to weather any storm such as the COVID storm. We have a wonderful finance team headed by Mark Espinosa, our chief financial officer. And they really watch things very, very carefully. And when COVID hit, for example, they were very, very quick to enact some very stringent cost-saving measures so that we didn't go into the red during that period.
Great. Well, thank
Joe,
you.
Joe, do you want me to give a little bit of personal history too, or is save that for another session?
I think when you take over the president's pod, the very first one like mine should be meet the president and then have the entire episode about you.
Perfect. Perfect.
Sound like a plan? Okay. Awesome. Our next, and I say that because I just got a technical text from the producers of the show saying to make sure we stick on time in 5 minutes for each person. So I'll make up some time, Peter, by saying thank you, and we'll have
my pleasure. I'm just happy to be here and again support, you know, talk a little bit about the finance role.
And I really appreciate it. I asked Peter last minute, of course, to change his plans and accommodate Bob's OR problems, and he stepped up. So thank you, Peter, very much. The next board vice president is on the PSF line, the board vice president of research, Howie Levinson.
Thanks, Joe. And thanks to everybody else for their support and for joining us. Thanks to Ash and Michelle. And then Jennifer and Renee as well for help putting this on. So just briefly to try to stay on time, as the vice president of research, there's three main sort of lines that I oversee. And for those of you who are sort of listening tonight, you can look at the org chart online at ASPS, which is super helpful. And I think Joe pointed out, I didn't really know it myself into doing it for several years. And it's important, you know, to kind of strategize your career if you really want to get involved with the ASPS. If you want to talk about that, email me and we could have conversations about strategy for career development. But in short, as a VP of research, I oversee three things. So the Research Oversight Council or committees, which is Research Education Committee, BIA, and Clinical Research Subcommittee and Regenerative Medicine. I look at Quality and Performance Measurement Committee. Those are the sort of the guidelines that we produce as a society. Those are also interacting with like MIPS and CMS. And other sort of societies when they want to come out with sort of quality care statements, if you will, and national guidelines and things of that nature. The third thing I oversee is the registries committee. That's the TOPS, GRAFT, and NBIR. And I work closely with many of our staff members. So Katie Summers and Chris Simmons and Surinder Kaur and Ruth Auri and Marta Zielinski, who are all just wonderful. And I'll tell you, there's basically two parts of the society. There are sort of the staff who are full-time, sort of employed, and then there's, you know, we, the volunteers, the plastic surgeons. And I'll tell you, the staff are just wonderful. They do a lot of great, great, great work, and they make life way easier to be a volunteer. So I really want to thank the staff. They're really the sort of the unsung heroes who get the work done while we as volunteers kind of rotate through year after year, if you will. So that's what I sort of do. Personally, I'm at Duke. I've been there for over 15 years now. I was like that decade with Dave thing, but even worse. So I trained for 11 years. I did 5 years of general surgery in Brooklyn at Downstate. I did 3 years of research, a year at NYU and 2 years at Penn State because I was just a glutton for punishment. And then I went and did 3 years of plastic surgery at Duke, where I then stayed on. I actually had a KO8 grant. I was really fortunate. 2 weeks after I graduated, the KO8 came through because I was writing in my residency. Because like I said, I'm a glutton for punishment. Or maybe I just kind of like the creative aspect of research. So that was sort of my path. And then I've stayed on at Duke. I'll tell you, yes, I do research investigation, but I've always wanted to have impact and innovate and change things. And that's where this sort of commercialization, entrepreneurship sort of passion comes from. I don't want to just study the way the world works and write a book or a paper. I kind of want to be able to develop things to help us improve care. And so I have a spin-out company, a med device company, a hernia mesh called the T-Line Hernia Mesh, which is now on market and we're growing. And it's just emerging now. And so I came up with an idea in 2015 on a napkin and now developed this product. And we can talk about all that if you want at another point. And I have some other ideas for other products. But I also, for the society, we're working as a team, the executive committee, to, if we can, create the first ever surgical accelerator, which is really exciting because then we can help all of you who are interested in bringing your ideas forward, because our society really thrives on innovation, and it's the new technologies we bring that we can use in the operating room can help us improve care. It's not just the surgeries we do, but the technology. So if we can work together as a team with investors and regulatory people and entrepreneurs and strategics and all the sorts of people you need, which I think we can really have a nice impact and have fun in kind of doing it. All of this and my role in the society, it's really member service. It's really simple. It's kind of altruism. It's giving back. And it's really rewarding to create something bigger and better than yourself. And that's really what I like. I love, love, love our interaction. I love working with all the people on the phone. It really is the highlight of my day. They're just super talented people who are fun to be with. I'll tell you personal things about myself, my little sort of, I guess, a funny or whatever thing. But when I was a kid, I grew up in New York also. I grew up actually near where Alan Matarazzo lives, in Lawrence in Long Island. And I used to work over at the beach club as a cabana boy. So I was, the movie, The Flamingo Kid? That was my job. And it was like the movie. It was quite fun. So that was me when I was younger. So there's a little tidbit. Now that I'm older, I play soccer. I love playing sports. I do P90X to stay in shape. I play soccer once a week for an hour and a half and pray I don't kill myself and get hurt. And I love to kite surf. So anybody ever wants to kiteboard or kite surf, like, let's go do it. I love it. It's great at the Outer Banks, North Carolina. I'm turning 50 this year in May. I'm going to do a trip in the Caribbean with my friends to go kite surfing and have a good time. It's my 20th anniversary. My lovely wife, Melanie, is just fantastic. She's a museum curator. She used to work at the Metropolitan Museum for about 10 years in ancient Near Eastern art. And now she's at a children's museum in North Carolina. And then I got three kiddos, so I know it's kind of cheesy, but I'll just show it to you. So that's Gabby is my 17-year-old there in the background. And then I got Hutch over there. He's my junior. He's 14. He's trying out for the golf team. That's where I was earlier today, working and helping him out with his putting and stroke. And that's Savannah. She's my Auburn, my redhead there. She's my, she's in sixth grade. So three kids are really wonderful. Just, you know, that's the apple of my eye and sort of watching them grow. I mean, that's what it's really all about. So anyway, thank you.
Howie, thank you so much. It's we've got a young board, lots of young kids on this. Hopefully we bring them all to the meeting this fall in Atlanta over the Halloween holiday, where there will be trick-or-treating and lots of parties and fun events for the kids and the adults. I see Dr. Bob Basu has joined us. Bob, I've told everybody that you were stuck in the OR. As the treasurer for our society, you were making money in the OR, and we appreciate that. Dr. Rubin actually reported on what you do for us, what your job is. Could you take 1 or 2 minutes and just tell us about you, how you got to be where you are, and some personal things about you so that our membership gets to know who holds the purse strings.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Sorry I was late, but thanks for putting this together. I think this is a lot of fun, and so I'm glad I was able to join. So my role is as board vice president of finance and treasurer. I know Peter Rubin went over the details of that. I got involved with ASPS through YPS, which I found to be a microcosm of the larger organization many years ago. And I fell in love with all the work that we're doing. My particular passions in the organization have been advocacy, patient safety, and finance. And I grew my interest with finance actually through leadership training and development through ASPS. That was the first exposure. And then in 2013, I believe, I got the ASPS scholarship for health policy to attend a mini kind of business school boot camp with the American College of Surgeons. So for those that are on the call, definitely apply for that scholarship. It's a 1-week boot camp in Boston. And that gave me exposure to some business school curriculum and kind of set the match on fire for me to go back to school to get my MBA. And that's how I got involved with the financial aspect of our organization. at ASBS and the foundation, where I got involved with the Finance and Investment Committee, really understanding what really keeps the engine running for our mission, both at ASBS and the foundation, both in terms of our budget, as well as our investments that help fund projects, as well as our important research grants and PSF endeavors. And so that's how I got involved, and that's how I kind of had that pathway to get more involved with finance. Personal notes, I'm originally born in Boston, grew up outside of Philadelphia in southern New Jersey, a town called Cherry Hill, New Jersey. Grew up as an Eagles fan. I did switch over to become a Texans fan, but that is a very sore point right now. Difficult topic if you're a football fan for us Texans. I came down to Houston to do my residency training in plastic surgery at Baylor College of Medicine. I've stayed here and been in private practice. I'm an aesthetic plastic surgeon. I do 100% aesthetic plastic surgery. I'm also married to a plastic surgeon, Dr. Soojin Kim, who's also an ASPS member. We do not practice together. People always ask, well, why don't you practice together? And I usually respond, because we want to stay married. And so she has her own independent private practice. And we have two rambunctious boys. Ages 10, Devin and Dylan, ages 10 and 8. And on our free time, that really occupies our time because they have now fallen in love with their respective sports. My older one is a big basketball player, and now he's picked up lacrosse, and my younger one loves soccer. And he plays basketball more to be like his brother, but his acumen is really soccer. So going to games and making sure we're supporting them is really ties up our free time. Any time left from that besides ASPS work is really trying to get to the gym and trying to stay fit. The problem is I'm a foodie. I love to eat. I love dining out. So, if I don't go to the gym, I'm going to probably need bariatric surgery and post-bariatric surgery. So I do love to eat and I love to dine out. And at these meetings, hopefully once we start resuming in person, I look forward to having dinners with all of you again and having fun. I know in the past, Greg and I have caught some dinners in New York and other places. I'm enjoying my time serving on the executive committee and serving the society. I think it's an honor to work with everyone here. I think everyone has some amazing ideas, and I look forward to making sure the finances are there to support all those endeavors.
Thank you very much, Bob. And again, I didn't realize we had such a young, lots of young kids, and hopefully we can all join together in Atlanta for a big, fun family event. So before I introduce the last, certainly not least, board vice president, I'm going to ask Ash and Michelle to take over after this. I'm going to go silent and to moderate some questions and to see if we can get some of the folks that are online to unmute and ask some insightful and challenging questions to the board vice presidents. So finally, with the ASPS line, board vice presidents of who's taught me so much, and I'm really sad that it's taken me this long to become good friends with this guy, which is Greg Greco, who's our board vice president for health policy and advocacy. Greg.
Joe, thank you for the introduction. Michelle, Ash, thank you everybody for hosting this tonight. I think it's such a great idea. I'm just going to lie about everything. You guys have said way too many impressive things, so I'm just going to just say things. I oversee the health policy and the government type stuff that you're always getting emails about. So what we do, the lines that I oversee are the Legislative Advocacy Committee, the Health Policy, Coding and Payment Policy, the Virtual Fly-In, something that we're going to talk about in a couple of seconds. What we do is we basically are always looking out for anything that involves, either at the state level or at the national level, anything that involves plastic surgery or the House of Medicine in general. So this has to do, and I know that earlier someone, I think Harry mentioned MIPS and, you know, all the macro stuff, you know, so we're always advocating for our membership. This comes in many different forms. It comes at many different levels. And one of the things is the fly-in. This year, we had a very successful fly-in not too long ago, a couple of months ago, and our virtual fly-in is going to occur in May this year. But what we're doing is spreading it out, and this is a gratuitous push for all of you to join the fly-in. We are spreading it out over the course of 1 week, so because we understand you're not there in person. We can't have this great concentrated event. So what we're doing is making it at very very, you know, tenable times for everybody and an effort to get you all involved. You know, we always have some great speakers. We always have the opportunity for you to meet with members of Congress. This virtual format has actually made it quite nice because we've had many more in-person meetings with our actual members versus just the legislative aides. And any of you have had the opportunity to do this, you understand how important it is to, you know, for our profession. That's one of the things. Also, we I'm a part of the PAC, your political action committee. And this is something that, you know, we always appreciate everything our members do for the PAC. And again, as Bob mentioned and Peter mentioned, you know, we're, I think, good stewards of our PAC money. And we really try to support people. We listen to our members and we certainly are always trying to, you know, push for the promotion of any healthcare policy related to plastic surgery. Just again, to try to get this wrapped up a little quicker. On a personal note, as far as my training goes, I am a fully board certified general surgery, continue to get recertified in general surgery. I did my training in plastic surgery at the University of Illinois in Chicago with Mimis Cohen. I then came back to the East Coast. I am a New Yorker. We have a lot of New Yorkers on this call. My mother's from Little Italy and my father's from Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. We are very Italian people. And then we finally made the trek out to Long Island like everyone does, so into the country. And after that, I wanted to come back to the East Coast. So I opened up a practice. I went into private practice. I have a solo aesthetic practice in Red Bank, New Jersey, which is just a suburb, a kind of a bedroom community in New York, and also in New York City. And I live in both places as well. I live at the Jersey Shore and I live in New York City as well. I do have an apartment for sale in New York City if anybody's interested. So my practice, interestingly, we did not have plastic surgery residents at my practice. So I started getting involved with my general surgical residents. We did have a general surgery program. It's in fact the general surgery program, Monmouth Medical Center, where I trained. So I started as the clerkship director for Drexel University. And now I'm the clerkship director, or I was at Robert Wood. And So I taught general surgery four times a year for 15 years before I became the program director of the general surgery program. And I've had at my own program 26 general surgical residents for the last 5 years that I babysit. And then now I have an extra 70 from the Robert Wood program where I'm the associate program director. I'm knee deep in gallbladders and I can tell you more about, you know, NCCN guidelines for pancreatic cancer. And, you know, it's the world I live in, unfortunately. I love working with plastic surgery residents. I finally got a PLA with one of the local, with Cooper, Dr. Bonowitz. So I at least get plastic surgery residents in my office, which I love. So things you don't know about me, I'm a twin. We look nothing alike. I'm a big time scuba diver. I have, you know, just a couple of C's left to scuba dive throughout this world. I've been doing that for years. I've been married to my husband for 26 years, actually. We met when I was a second year surgical resident. I have two rescues. I'm an avid, animal fan. I boat and I paddleboard and do everything on the water that I can. So. Thank you. Thank you all for this. And again, big kudos to the staff because none of us could do our jobs without the ASPS staff. I know Steve was kind enough to mention a bunch of names. You guys rock. Thank you.
That was great information from all the board vice presidents. I almost feel like they were stalling a little bit to shorten the amount of open season time we have on them. I want to encourage any of the attendees to send in emails or put your virtual hand up. The staff can see that, and we will be able to bring you in live actually to ask your question, which will be really great. So while we wait for you to do that, we do have some questions that came through at the special President's Pod email address of askjoe@plasticsurgery.org. So I'm gonna start out with asking one of those, and the question comes from Chris Kalmar in Hershey, Pennsylvania. And this may be relevant to Bruce, maybe Scott Hollenbeck as well. And the question is how do you anticipate that the USMLE becoming pass-fail will affect the future of plastic surgery training? And what advice would you have for programs and applicants for the next 2 years as this is implemented?
Well, I'll take a stab at that, Scott, to start off with. So I'll talk mostly out of my personal opinion from running a program and being a former program director and looking at hundreds and hundreds of applicants every year. I think that's fine. I think pass fail for that is fine. I think if you really look at the number for the step one and step two, it really correlates with overall academic record. And so the people that have lots of high passes and honors and A's in their clinical clerkships are the ones that are getting really super great scores on their step one and step twos. And those who, you look at a step one or step two first and then go look at their transcript, it's almost a direct correlation with the grades. So I think you can't really do well in step one unless you have the core knowledge base from the first 1 and 2 years in medical school. And then step two, you can't do well unless you do really well in your clerkships and really. So I don't think it makes a difference. I think for programs that screen applicants, it may make a difference. If they screen by step scores, it may make their screening process harder. We personally don't do it. And then in terms of like weeding out people that may not be smart enough to be in our specialty or competitive enough to get the residency, I think there's plenty of other things on the application that will tell us whether they're appropriate to be training with us. What do you think, Scott?
Yeah, good question. And I'll speak from the perspective of the students as best I can. Working at Duke here, I do see a lot of the students come through. And we've just wrapped up our rounds of recruitment, so interviews. So we've talked about that a little bit. The issues that come up are many students use the USMLE Step 1 score to advance or to jump a level in a relative perception of the strength of the program, either that they're at and they want to go to. That's especially true for students that are at perhaps lesser known medical schools or lesser notoriety medical schools. So that's a potential disadvantage of eliminating that, is that they will now struggle perhaps a little more to make that jump into a higher profile program. But for all the reasons you said there before, there are many benefits to that. What I'm finding is students now are putting a lot of the emphasis on step two, which remains a scored test. So simply it's been just pushed on to another test at this point in time. So that's all I have to say about that.
Awesome. We got another question that was submitted through email from Ornella Kutsky, who's a fellow at Temple, and it's in regards to the ASPS job board. It says that there's a whole lot more, essentially I'm going to summarize it. There's a whole lot more residents graduating than there are jobs on the job board. Who is responsible for the job board, and how could we expand it or encourage the members to list their jobs on the job board?
I'll jump into that. That kind of falls a little bit under member services. We want to make sure that we're able to provide that as a service. PSN for a long time had been the vehicle that people were advertising jobs through. And when we developed the website, it was actually as a lower cost, more accessible way that people could have a more longitudinal posting, because again, typically the pattern that when people are looking for jobs is they really start advertising for job availability early in the year, trying to attract some of the residents. And so some of those changes, some of what we changed was trying to take advantage of being able to have a format that had a longer tail. I do think that as that hasn't been as established and as old as what PSN has done in the past, there is still a little bit of an adoption curve we're following. And so I expect that to get better over time. We maybe need to do an article or PSN article or an email about it as a resource. It's a good idea.
Thanks, Steve.
So I think this is a question that perhaps Howie and Greg can answer. I guess we'll start with Howie because he seems to be the board vice president of acronyms as well. So a whole bunch of acronyms you mentioned, which maybe the attendees aren't familiar with. But some of the stuff I wanted you to talk about was registries. You know, why are they important? Why should our members be participating in some of these registries, particularly something like the NBIR?
And one of the questions that we did receive by email was about the NBIR app. How does that differ with perhaps some of the other apps that are out there that can also that surgeons can also input information about breast implants?
I'm not sure the latter one, the other apps that you're referring to, Ash, it's a little hard for me to answer that. I do know that we do have our apps and we're always driving to get more members to participate. So the down and dirty is registries. So think about the world without registries, right? Like how are we gonna do quality? How do we track how we're doing relative to our peers? You know, how do we learn from that? That's gonna be important. If we want to study the implants we're putting into patients, which we do, and the FDA now looks at us and says, how do we know that what you're putting in is safe? Then that becomes a problem because we don't have an answer. And the companies themselves, industry struggles with this, with tracking things. So the registries are sort of fundamental for us to be able to, as a society, watch what we're doing for patients and to gather data and to make sure what we're doing is safe. And there are multiple registries. There's the graft, which is the fat grafting. I mean, many of you probably can remember years ago where there was a question of, is it even safe to fat graft into the breast, right? Or are you going to be promoting cancer? It was a really sort of hot topic. And now we kind of understand it is safe, right? But you take, when you're younger, you take it for granted. But when you kind of live through it, and well, you all get there with something, you kind of start to appreciate things as you go through them in life. And so those registries keep our patients safe, keep our practices sort of going. And that's why, you know, it's a big cornerstone of what we do. And it's important with industry. It's important with oversight, with regulatory. And we're just evolving the technologies to try to make it easier. We know it's a pain in the butt to enter into registries. And we know that like in academics, it's very difficult because of these hurdles. We want to make it as simple as possible. We really want people to participate. We want their feedback, what their problems are, so we can begin to troubleshoot that and be more effective.
If I can jump on that as well, too, Howie, that was a great answer. But you know, as Howie said, registries are necessary for patient safety, and increasingly so, government is expecting physician participation. That being said, as Howie said, they're challenging to use. They're one more thing that we have to do in terms of documentation in an already very busy day. The technology that's in the MBIR app actually is. It's not groundbreaking from a technology standpoint, but it's relatively groundbreaking for an app that's interfacing with the registry. And you know, some of the new developments that app supports are, you know, recognition of forms, automatic population of data, things that really, really make data entry as painless and as efficient as possible. There's been a lot of thought that ASPS has put into that app development, including if you're at a university that actually blocks your signal because they don't want you participate, you know, they don't want your phone connecting outside, the app will actually wait until it finds a signal and then send your data. And so all those small things seem like relatively small features, but the evolution thought and feedback we've gotten from our member physicians on how to make it better have really kind of gotten that app it's really a serious piece of technology right now. And registries are here to stay. I think this makes it a lot less painful. I know Scott's been doing a lot of work on that too. Scott, anything to add to that?
No, I think you summed it up well, Steve. I think it makes it, we've been using the catchphrase, inexcusably easy, right? You know, we did hear what the members said, and they were, you know, there were some issues with regards to putting the data in, typing it in. In less than 15 seconds now, with two swipes, two scans, you can get all the core data for patient, for device tracking into the app, and then it automatically gets sent into the, you know, into the database, but also to the companies and to the patient if you want. So I think it does all the core things. Obviously, we want people to then step up and go into NBIR and fill out all the further data, which is obviously helpful. The hope is that once you get your sort of toe in the water, that you'll want to put your whole foot in, so to speak, and that people will then, you know, be more engaged with NBIR.
Just to add to that, I mean, we are often the subject matter experts for the FDA, for the CDC. So, you know, you're helping, you know, promote the profession and certainly the use of the products, regardless of what we're doing. So, you know, again, I think everybody listens on this end to try to make this as easy as possible. And my office doesn't even complain about using the app. The MBIR app is incredibly easy to use. So great answers, everybody.
Wow. Well, we're coming up on the hour. I think Ash, Michelle, our guest tonight, got off very easy. A couple of canned prepackaged questions from the internet, and not a lot of hard, tough questions from the audience tonight. So consider yourselves lucky. As we close in the next minute or so, I'm going to ask all the panelists to think quickly and come up with a very short answer to the question for some of our junior attendees, some of those that are just starting out and who might think they would like to get involved with ASPS and maybe be on a call like this sometime in the future. What advice would you give somebody starting out how to get involved? Scott.
Which Scott?
You, Scott. Sorry.
early and often. And the best way to do it is to find an area that's, you know, close to your heart and your passion. For me, it was, you know, politics and advocacy. So that's where I started. And by getting engaged, it'll soon open up new opportunities to take on, you know, other areas of the society, and you'll find other interests. And most importantly, you'll actually learn a ton. In all the years I've been doing this, I have learned more than, you know, probably I've given.
Yeah, I'll jump in next. You know, the other thing is, I echo Scott's, you know, find your passion. ASPS is large and diverse enough that whatever you're interested in, there's a role for you. And you know, service sometimes people see as a burden, but it's really giving back to the profession that supports us. It adds to the patient experience. It adds to our colleagues. And I've met some great friends and some amazing people here. And it's one of those things that it makes my life personally better too, because I get to connect and become close and become better friends with people that I that are within ASPS that I wouldn't normally get to meet.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I would say if we have some early career members on the Zoom, I think the first step would be to join ASPS through YPS is a great starting point. As Steve just said, it's a great place to build your network amongst your peers, people that you will call when you have questions about cases or need advice about your practice, and you'll grow with them. And I've had that experience as well through too. So, and if there's some residents on this call too, the residents section is also a great starting point as well too. So there's get involved. We need your input. We need your help. It's and help the specialty.
Yeah, I started with YPS with Bob. Bob never left YPS. He's going to be until he collects Medicare. But I think ultimately...
So it's all the Botox.
Exactly. Find a mentor. I think that really worked for me. Find someone as a mentor and get involved. I love getting students involved. I love getting residents involved. And if you're out there and you want to get involved, just, you know, you can email any one of us and we will introduce you and get you started. We'll get you on a committee, at least to audit. You may not be a member at first, but that's how you do it. Don't be afraid. It's not intimidating. You don't have to know a thing. You're here to learn. And you know, that really worked for me. And finding a couple of mentors that took me up through ASPS was really gratifying. And I really appreciate every moment of it and meeting all these people.
Hey Joe, I would say that, that's a very important point, Greg, because you know, most people, especially starting out, are kind of like intimidated and afraid, like, how do I get involved? And as a leader in this organization and many other organizations, we're always looking for people who want to be involved. And so making yourself known that you want to be part of the organization in some manner is the first step. And that's either connecting with a mentor or someone you know, someone you trained with, who you know is part of ASPS. And then it kind of just flows from there. Once you get going, it can keep on going.
Yeah, and I'll add that the time you put in is really well spent and it returns to you. ASPS has put a lot of thought into the ascension of members through the ranks and in the leadership. There's a lot of feedback that occurs. And so if you take the time, do a good job, you have great opportunity to continue to be involved and to continue to rise up and take on more responsibility. And that, I think, is one of the really unique things about ASPS. It's not that the president picks every single person on their own or something. You get to work with your colleagues, and everybody can contribute in that way.
Yeah, I would just add, I put on the chat, just if you click the link for the ARC chart, you can see everything there. And I'd say is, listen, 90% of our society is private practice. It's not, 10% is academic. So for the younger people, you think everything, it's really mostly private practitioners who are participating. It's a volunteer society. You're going to get out and practice surgery, but then what are you doing? So I did a rhinoplasty, I did a tummy tuck or whatever, I saved a leg, which is great, but it's sometimes nice to contribute to the overall good and do something more. And to me, that's what academics is. And so do that. It'll give you something to do in the evenings or during the day and be rewarding. You'll meet your colleagues. You'll get to interact with people socially. You'll develop a network of people to talk to and friendships that will last. It's a professional society. And no matter what profession are, you should probably be doing that. You guys are plastic surgeons. So this makes the most sense to do it. Pick a committee or two. I think I forget when it comes out, Joe. Is it spring or do you remember, or fall, when the requests for applications, I forget exactly. When, Ash, do you remember when it is?
It's actually already went out by email. So the committee application is online on the plasticsurgery.org website. Under your own profile, you can find the committee applications.
So pick one or two that you think are interesting.
Yeah.
And just go for it. Show up to the committee meetings and do something. Get engaged and do something. And if you continue to do something, volunteer, it just snowballs forward, and everybody wants you to be engaged. We want diversity. We want to learn from each other, and we love enthusiasm. So.
And I couldn't finish on a better note than that, Howie. I mean, it's exciting and enjoyable and meaningful and rewarding to get involved and to have a group of friends like this ultimately someday. It's the best part of medicine. So with that, I'd like to thank Ash and Michelle for helping organize, our staff for putting together the pod, and for all of our guests tonight and for the attendees. And we will package this as a podcast so people can listen to it in the future and learn more about our VEEPs. So thank you all so much for joining tonight, and until next time.
Good night.
Bye now. Bye.